Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my life.
Cook it in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, 3CR's look at the Australian film industry. And I received in my email box Indie Australian Aussie Filmmakers Global Film Release. And so I went off and I had a word with them. This is a conversation I had with the director and one of the producers of a film called Arno 2020. It was shot during the height of the pandemic in five countries, four continents, and in 17 different cities. What isn't interesting about a film that this ambitious? So I had a word with the two. I spoke to Gil and Ben Mozzie, who's the producer, and James Morcan, who is the leading light. He's an author of about 25 books, and this particular film was based on, loosely on one of his books, but really it's about the work that goes into making such a grand project on a very small budget. So I had a chat with the two guys.
Arno 2020 was obviously conceived during COVID. So how did it all begin? How did this project begin for you guys?
Two words, James Morcan. It was his idea and it was his vision. James, maybe you should explain to Annie about the book and your idea and maybe take it from there.
Yeah, sure. So, as Gil was alluding to there, it started out as a novel. So it was basically me just trying to process what we were experiencing during that time. And I didn't have any answers and I still don't, but we were just asking questions and we wanted everyone's voice to be heard. And it was sort of showing some of the paranoia and also arguments that people were having during that time around the world. And then it just sort of broadened from there into this huge... Gil, do you want to talk about how we produced it?
Look, Annie, I'm going to tell you this. It was very unorthodox, all right, in the way you make films. It really, because we had... So for me personally, I had to think outside the box. And another creative genius who's part of our team is Simon Carter. He was our director of photography, our editor, and our technician, our technical advisor. He was brilliant. So he came up with a lot of different ways to make this happen. And, you know, I think for James as well, I mean, because this was James's directorial debut for a feature film. Now, he has co-directed a lot before, but this was his first feature. But could you imagine, Annie, what it'd be like for your first movie to be directing remotely for half of the movie and especially around the world? I mean, what director do you think can ever say that they have been directing remotely? You're always on set. So wasn't that interesting from your perspective, James?
Yeah, so we had that, as Gil mentioned, like we had that constant sort of variety where we were able to shoot in some states here in Australia. But then obviously during lockdown, we wanted to capture lockdown as it happened. So, you know, that meant that we couldn't go to places around the world. Not that we really had the budget to go to many anyway, because the key detail here is I think 17 cities, but $6,000 budget. It was kind of the kindness of a lot of people we were working with that they were so passionate about it that they had a TV studio, say in New York State, or they had a film crew in Los Angeles. So everyone just sort of chipped in around the world. And I think it was there was that sort of community spirit during that time as well.
Did you give them assignments? I mean, how did you do it? Did you write a script, give everybody the script, and then give them assignments, or what?
Pretty much, like, we wanted to just evolve it in every region. And sometimes people pitched ideas to us, and if I thought it matched the story, then we'd go ahead with it. And it grew into this beast that Gil, we could hardly recognize it, don't you think, as it went on?
Look, from day one, Annie, if I look at what James put before me as to what it is today, it is completely different. It's like watching a child, a baby. It's like watching a baby who's just been born, and then you look at it 6 months later, and then you haven't seen him in 15 years, and then he's a teenager. That's kind of how this movie evolved. Wouldn't you say, James, it was kind of that progression?
That's right, and I think that was primarily because we used a technique called cinema verite, which is, instead of recreating the world, which is what most movies do, you actually put your cast out into the world that already exists. And that's where we enter a little bit of a docudrama space. For example, we captured the Black Lives Matter stuff in Washington, D.C. And I mean, to recreate that now, if you were doing an historical picture looking back, to recreate that now would be, with those extras shutting down the boulevards and that would be hundreds of thousands, I promise you. But we just got our actor right there into it.
One of our cast members, Greg Poppleton, he said in one of the Q&As that he believes that this movie can become an artifact almost as official documentation as to what actually happened in that year. Because it was all shot in real time and during the height of the pandemic, there'll be a lot of recreations of this, but because this actually happened in real time, that's where the authenticity really comes into it. And it was genuine, because there's a lot of mask wearing and social distancing and all that kind of stuff, but that happened in real time and in real life as well. And the great thing for us is that we're hoping, from what we're finding, is that everyone experiences, Annie. The whole world experiences. So we're really hoping that people will resonate because they all went through it the same way we did.
Let's go back to the making of the film, because we've now established that various actors, because they're all in different places, and like you said, everybody did experience COVID, and people were in isolation. And a lot of the storylines are based on people trying to make connections and also failing to maintain connections. And was this something that was core to your novel, or was it part of what you discovered people wanted to talk about?
It was a little bit of both. I think that was in the novel. Interconnectedness was a big thing, but then also remoteness and isolation, exploring those two juxtapositions at once. But then we also got into a process where we got to know the actors, and they revealed things to us about their lives, either in their past or what they're experiencing in the present time. And it just became too good not to. So we had a very brave cast, Gil included, where you guys put in a lot of real life stuff. So it wasn't always my fiction. And so that kind of twisted and turned the plot in different ways that was beyond me. And that's why all the actors actually get a screenwriting credit with me, a type of screenwriting credit, a minor one, but they're all adding dialogue and so on. So it just really twist and turn in ways that we had to watch. And then in the edit, finally, we had enough for a massive TV series. So then it was about pairing it back. And that's sort of, again, going back to the documentary analogy, even though it's a strict drama, but I was using techniques that documentary filmmakers make where you're not afraid of having that much content, but then in the end, they can pare it down to what they need.
Because you got the stories of all the different people that were involved, you're able to get quite a broad range of different types of people from different cultural backgrounds. So that's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. Gil, do you want to talk about that? Because we were obviously casting it together. So.
Yeah, well, look, we all decided that when we were going to make this film, especially James, when he was developing the stories and the characters as well, it's very interesting when you get different people from different backgrounds who have got different ethnicities, because they've all been grown up differently, Annie. You know, whether they were born here or they came from a different country, they've all got different experiences. And as people, and especially as actors, James wanted to put that and to translate that onto screen. So it's really all about the traumas that we have in life, but also collaborating together. So we give you different perspectives about what our lives are and what our lives have been. And I think that came across, or I hope that came across in the film. A lot of critics actually did mention that, and they love the fact that we had, well, obviously it's a kaleidoscope, so it does contain multiple plots, but also, like you mentioned, different ethnicities. You know, we have in America the Rochester plot with a lot of Afro-Americans, and then we had the Chinese plot, and then, you know, we've got an Israeli girl, and then myself with my Jewish background here as well. So I think that was very interesting for a lot of audiences to see.
Because COVID was such a strange sort of affair, and you were making this film while people were actually experiencing it, they must have found it almost therapeutic to work on the film.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Gil, you were acting more than me. I just play a bit part, but you were experiencing it. So what was that like to...
Do you know what I've said from day one, Annie? James, during COVID, saved my sanity because everyone was losing their minds during lockdowns, you know? And for most people, it felt like it was a prison sentence, you know? So we're locked in four walls all day. Then we get an hour to exercise and then we're back within the four walls. And that's kind of what it felt like. But the great thing for me and for the rest of the team and for the rest of the cast, because all the industry was shut down, it gave us something to work on. I had to learn big monologues that James wrote for me. So it kept me busy. And apart from that, producing this with James, as well as Simon and Angela in Brisbane and a couple of others in the States. So that saved me personally during lockdowns, because it gave us something to do, and we always had something to do. And it's interesting as well, one last thing, and is that when you're dealing with five different time zones, some of our shoots started at 2 a.m., at 3 a.m., at 4 a.m. They started. So we was trying to stay awake all night. Then we were shooting for 12 to 15 hours, and then we were doing it again because we were working around everyone else's schedules.
Tell me about the shooting, because... was it through the computers or what sort of technology did you use?
So it was actually a variety. Like some of the scenes you see, it's recreating what we're on now, like something like Zoom. But sometimes we shot it via camera and then we've recreated that look. So it gives the illusion that it was a... sometimes it was...
but it's better quality. It's better quality.
Yeah, yes.
Right. That's right. There were iPads as well. There were telephones, iPhones. There were laptops.
We pretty much used everything, didn't we, Gil? Like everything.
We did.
Phones.
And it was great because it really helped James, Annie, because when we were shooting, well, obviously overseas for half of this film, James wasn't on set. So he was relying on all of these devices to see the production set. Was he happy with the lighting? Was he happy with the production design? Was he happy with the props? We actually attached a phone onto a camera, and that was moving around while he was trying to show James, are you happy with this? Are you happy with that? And then we would sneak in an iPad up in the top corner to give us another angle, and then another one on top of a fridge for another angle or whatever, somewhere behind the couch. And that's basically how James was able to direct his camera people around the world, because we used to watch James, six or seven different cameras throughout, right?
And we probably had about six or seven film crews around the world.
Yeah.
Like we even had Chinese associates shooting during their extreme lockdown.
How did you find that, James, as a director? That's really challenging.
Well, you would think it would only be a negative, but I would call it a negative and a positive in that some ways it was actually better when we were able to just focus on the acting, because film sets are a very busy place. It's not a writer's movie. I would call it a... acting and editing, those two things are to the fore, if you ask me. And then obviously we bring in the music and so on. So if we didn't have great performances, this movie would die. So it just allowed the actors to not worry about any of the other things. But a lot of the times it was just, we'll focus on this and only this. So I actually found that we were able to go deeper. And the communal experience during that time, people didn't have distractions. So they were going, we were actually going very, very deep into character. And the key thing with this, I think, going back to what you were saying before about different cultures, I decided to have this movie, 75% was improvised dialogue. So I had it all written, but then we evolved it. And that was purposely done so that I felt it'd be arrogant. I can't cover this many cultures and know how African-American characters would speak exactly, how characters, the Jewish characters even at times, or the Chinese character, I don't know exactly. So I wanted them to be able to put it in their words. I would also add to that that we've talked a lot here about COVID, but for me, that's really the backdrop of the story. But this, a lot of the story could have been told at any time, but I felt that this period heightened the intensity. I didn't want to fall into the trap of this as a lockdown movie or anything. I believe it transcends that into deeper themes about relationships, really.
It was actually interesting for the actors as well, because they hadn't experienced it before either. So when they were just sitting at their homes or in their backyards or anywhere else where we were shooting, it was just them and their computers. And sometimes it felt a little weird and uncomfortable for them initially, only initially. They got used to it, because I remember a lot of them were saying it didn't feel like they were on a film set. Because, you know, it's like what James said, they're very chaotic. You've got crew and production people and blah, 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 producers and assistant directors running around. Everything's going on. But when you're sitting in your room or in your lounge and it's just you and your computer and you're still being recorded, that they found that a great trait for them, because all they were able to do was to focus and concentrate on their performance, because there was no other distractions around them. As James said initially, he really wanted to give the actors as much creative freedom as possible, hence why he introduced the whole improvisation scenario, right, for most of the actors. And they really embraced it. Initially, Annie, I'll be honest with you, a few of them, they weren't sure about what was going on, but then they really embraced it and then they really understood it because it was new.
It's a little bit like a crossover from a feature TikTok, if you know what I mean. Like they're in control. They've got more control than they'd normally expect, right?
That is exactly right. I know it's unknown territories, but it kind of worked in their favor, I felt, at the end, and especially for me as well. Because it felt weird being here by myself just with my laptop or my phone, but then it kind of worked in my favor as well.
How did you get all the actors? I mean, obviously, Gil, you're on board, but how did you get all the others? Did you just do a call out or is it people you know?
James?
I was pretty grateful that, Gil, you brought me a bunch of actors like here in Australia. So especially the great Australian child actress, I believe is an up-and-comer, as Audrey Nitschke plays Sophie. You brought me her. You'd already worked with her, which I was grateful.
Yeah.
And in a couple of cases, also the other child actors we had in America, they were contacts of other people in the cast. So I was grateful for that, because it's very hard to cast child actors, especially on a no-budget thing like this. We need a lot of trust. But apart from that, yeah, we put out call-outs and we were really surprised by the level we got. Backstage was one site we used to put out call-outs. I think we got lucky during this time also that people weren't working. So they were up for an experiment. But maybe the book-to-film angle helped. I mean, outside of Hollywood, you don't generally get many book-to-film. I haven't seen too many under, say, a $10 million budget book-to-film. So I think hopefully it gave a bit of class to the production.
We got 500 applications for one role.
Oh, well, there you go.
And just emphasizes James saying that everyone was out of work and looking for something to do. It worked in our favor.
The editing, because yes, that of course it is an actor's film and it is an editing film. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so that's sort of what I referred to previously about it's not really a writer's film, even though it's based on a novel. In order to catch this time period, I skipped the writing process because obviously it began inspired by these lockdowns, but then I wanted to catch that. Whereas normally you write a script over years, sometimes some writers could even be decades developing it. So, but I knew there's a way, and I think this has been forgotten in modern films. There is a way, and back in the 60s, 70s, they used to do this quite a bit, where you can skip the writing process. It's not recommended, but I believe there is a way. But the problem is with that is the warning is you will pay for it in the edit. So the edit became a massive online, like this was the equivalent of editing Gil, would you say it was more like the equivalent of editing a TV series rather than a feature?
Yes, yeah. And even at times four or five features at the same time, because all the storylines and plots were so big in themselves and they all developed as well. It was a nightmare. Put it this way, Annie, it was a nightmare for, because James sat in for every single moment with our editor, Simon Carter, every single take. And initially the movie was 7 hours long. So we were thinking, hey, trilogy, but we thought no. So then we cut it down to five and then to four and then three and then three and a half. And then we settled on two. And we really had to let go on a lot of really good scenes. And we had to even get rid of some plots as well, James. Remember, some people unfortunately didn't make the cut because it was just going to be way too long.
How long did it take to do the edit?
I think we're
What year are we in?
it's like that. I think it was about 3 years all up. And also we're facing like we're basically raising funds sometimes, so we're saving for new equipment and editing equipment and stuff like that, software. But it was constantly working on it, and I didn't want to rush it because I knew I was fully aware that I've skipped the writing process. There is a way, so I'm glad it actually was delayed and took longer, because there's nothing I regret removing at all. Not one frame, not 1 second, not one scene. Everything needed to go. And it was pretty interesting. Like, I pictured when I started writing this, I pictured this would be about a 2.5 hour movie. I wanted to do something a bit more epic because I'm covering also the year, the entire year. And I want this to last, let's say when children look at this, they could use this as a reference point in, this, in say the 2040s. They could look back, what did my parents or grandparents go through? And so it wasn't just about what's best for the characters in the story, but also a few points here and there where we're covering the year, like the Black Lives Matter thing, which I wouldn't say was crucial to the plot, but it was more about that. And I pictured 2.5 hours and the final thing was 2 hours 25. So it was in the ballpark of, it's not a case where it ballooned out into something and it got way bigger. I was always aiming for something epic and always expecting that would be streaming, but then very surprised that we ended up in cinemas.
So you've had several outings in the theatres, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah, we had three. We had our first one in April last year in Sydney at the Ritz, and then we went down to your nick of the woods in Melbourne, to the Lido in Hawthorne, and then we finished up Brisbane at the New Farm. So we had a three terrific premieres. They were all sold out. And what I really enjoyed, Annie, and as did James and all the other people who were affiliated with this film, we had three completely different screenings. One was just everybody, where it'd be tourists, corporates, families, whatever else you want to throw in there. Others in Melbourne was mainly film-based, right, James? Like 90% were all filmmakers. And then in Brisbane, we had the combination of filmmakers and actors and everything else. But we all had different reactions, and we had Q&As at the end of each screening. And they were really interesting as well. A lot of people had, like yourself, I'd imagine, Annie, you have a lot of questions about how we made this, and especially other filmmakers as well. So that was great, really great for us. We really enjoyed that.
And the actors, their reactions to the final result.
Some of them were surprised, like they'd only done their little bit and they didn't realise how epic a movie it was. Or let's say they were one of the first actors, and then they didn't realize that we were going to evolve it. So they didn't see the whole journey. So it's quite a shock to them, and they have to take it in and so on. Especially from a more veteran cast, I've got the sort of feedback I was hoping for from them, yeah.
Oh, that's great. So where can people see it?
We've got it on YouTube at this stage, and then Rumble, then we're putting it on Odyssey, and then we're in talks. We can't name names yet of the the streamers, but we're in talks for more traditional streamers in the future as well.
And that's it. That was a conversation I had with James Morcan and Gil Benmozzi about Anno 2020. Coming up next is Published or Not. I was
born. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.